We are going to begin this morning by giving attention to the book of Proverbs. We're going to go over to Proverbs chapter 24, and I want to read specifically here verse 16. Proverbs 24 and verse 16. For a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall by calamity. We, of course, live in the sports-minded society. You can't watch the news every day without having to watch all the latest sports information. And right now, of course, the Winter Olympics are a big deal on TV, and there's a lot of news coverage on that. But, you know, Monday mornings, after the weekends of sports, the main topic that's discussed by what we call armchair quarterbacks and those who are the bleacher players, is just how the ball game should have come out over the weekend. And, of course, the Super Bowl was a travesty, and I'm not going to get over that soon. But that's okay. But in this, of course, we can see an analogy to the church, if you stop and think about it. We hear people say things like, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing, and quitters never win, and winners never quit, and you know, these kind of things, there's a certain amount of truth in them, if you stop and think about it. There's a certain amount of truth. And I'd like for us to consider together this morning a look at the attributes of the winners and the quitters that we read about, both in the Old and in the New Testaments. And we're going to consider these as far as making application for us as Christians in the Lord's church today. I want to start off by looking with you at the Bible quitters. The Bible quitters. The first one that comes to my mind is one only identified as Lot's wife, or Mrs. Lot, if you want to call her that. But over in Genesis chapter 19 and verse 26, we learn that after the angels of the Lord had told the family of Lot to leave the city and not to look back, that Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. She is definitely one of the Bible quitters. She looked back and suffered the punishment that God had said that they would suffer, and that is that they would be punished for what they did. And you know, over the New Testament, we find a reference to that in Luke chapter 17, verses 28 through 32. Likewise, as it was in the days of Lot, they ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. Now, notice that all the things that were going on in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah kept going on as usual. That's what he's saying here. But notice, on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, what happened? It rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Now the setting here is, Jesus is talking about the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he says, and by the way, the context of this is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, and Jesus talking about when he will come to make his word good on destroying the temple, as he said he would as he walked upon the earth. In that day, he is on the housetop, his goods in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who's in the field, let him not turn back. Now, when the time came for what Jesus said was going to happen to Jerusalem, he says, when you see these things unfold, don't hesitate one minute. Don't even go back in the house. If you see these things, you go right now. You get out of there. And notice what he says. Remember Lot's wife. Now, of course, Jesus wasn't saying here that anybody who looked back will be turned to a pillar of salt. That's not what he's saying. The point is, if you want to survive what's going to happen, then you had better get yourself out of there as fast as you possibly can. Why? Well, because Lot's wife is an example of a Bible quitter. But we also learn over in Numbers chapter 20, or 13, I'm sorry, about the unfaithful spies that were sent in to spy out the land of Canaan. They were Bible quitters also. If you'll read with me from Numbers 13, beginning verse 31, the man who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people who we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so were we in their sight." What was the problem here? Well, they didn't have any faith in God. And they said, "Oh, we can't. But, you know, this isn't peculiar to the Old Testament, because some of Jesus' disciples were the same way. Over in John chapter 6, verses 60 through 66, many of the disciples, when they heard this, said, "This is a hard saying. Who can understand it?" Many of the things that Jesus taught were not being perceived spiritually. People were looking at them materially. When he said, "Eat of my flesh, drink of my blood," he wasn't talking about literally. And they said, "Whoa, we can't take this. This is strange. We can't do this." But Jesus, of course, saw this and saw that when they heard this, many of them went back. And he said to his disciples, "Does this offend you? Does this cause you to stumble?" In other words, "What then if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you who do not believe. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were who did not believe and who would betray him. And he said, 'Therefore I have said to you, no one can come to me unless it has been granted to him by my Father.' From that time, many of the disciples went back and walked with him no more." They were quitters. They were quitters. But you know, there's one fellow's name that's synonymous with quitters in the New Testament, and that man's name is Demas. In Philemon chapter, you find that for me. Philemon, verse 24, Paul's writing here to Philemon, and he says, "Mark and Aristarchus and Demas and Luke, my fellow laborers." Well, what did we learn about Demas? He was a fellow laborer with Paul. A fellow laborer, that's a good thing, right? In Colossians 4 and verse 14, and the letter to Colossae, "Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you." Why, Luke was the one who was helping here in the penning of this for the Apostle Paul. And look at this. He says, "We greet you." Demas was in good status. But look at what Paul says about Demas over here in 2 Timothy 4 and down at verse 10. "Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica." Yeah, the very one who was a fellow laborer, a faithful companion to Paul, forsook him. And notice why. "Having loved this present world." Now, we don't know specifically what the details are on this. We're not given that information here. But what we do know is that he was supposed to be there and supposed to be helping Paul in his work, but he left. He abandoned him, we might say. We don't know what the circumstances were. We don't know if he had loved ones that he needed to be with and felt that was more important to him than being with Paul. We don't know. There may have been material things involved that he felt were more important than serving God and working with Paul. We don't know. But we know this. He departed. He quit because of his love for this present world. And There's a whole lot of quitters that quit for that reason. They're so caught up in the things of this world and the day-to-day things of this life that the Lord is somewhere down the list. Somewhere down the list. And yeah, we'll take care of the work of the Lord if we get everything else done. Somehow I just don't think that the Lord's real pleased with that. But you know, there's another one that's synonymous with quitting. And we mentioned him just a minute ago in one of our readings, and that's Judas. He was a quitter. One of the 12 called Judas Iscariot, we read over in Matthew 26:14, went to the chief priests and said, "What are you willing to give me if I deliver him to you?" And they counted out to him 30 pieces of silver. And from that time on, he sought opportunity to betray him. Yes, this is one of the ones that have been with Jesus, walked with Jesus. One of his apostles that was chosen. But he was another one of the quitters. But let's flip this over and talk about the Bible winners. The Bible winners. Going right back to Numbers 13, Joshua and Caleb were definitely in the category of winners. We read in verse 30, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." That's the attitude of a winner. That's the attitude of a winner. Notice also in chapter 14, beginning in verse 7, they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." There's the attitude of a winner. That's the attitude of a winner. Implicit faith and trust in God. That's a winner. But you know, another winner that I read about was a young fellow by the name of David, who was actually a shepherd. Went out to check and see how things were going on the battle line with the Philistines, where his brothers were. And he found out this giant, this big giant, had been taunting them and saying, "Go ahead, send out your best soldier. Send him out here. Let's just settle this thing once and for all. You and me. Let's just settle it. Right now." And the nation of Israel didn't have a soldier, one, who wasn't quaking in his boots. They were scared. This man was huge. Absolutely huge. But little old David comes up there, little shepherd boy. He says, "What's going on here? Why are you allowing that man to insult God's people?" He said, "I'll take care of him." So they tried to put armor on him, you know, and get him all ready to go out there and fight. And he couldn't hardly stand up under it. You know, that armor was heavy stuff, you know that. And a young fellow like him, he just wasn't up to that. And it wasn't fitted to him, and he hadn't tested it or learned how to use it, I should say. He said, "I don't want all of that. I'll just take care of it." He grabbed up some stones and he took his slingshot with him. And you know, David came out there in 1 Samuel 17, beginning verse 45, and he said to this big old giant now, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Take note of that. This is the attitude of a winner. This is the attitude of a winner. Then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hands. And so it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David. David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And he put his hand in his bag, and he took out a stone, and he slung it, and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. And so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. No sword. Therefore David ran over, stood over the Philistine, and took the Philistine's sword, and drew it out of its sheath, and killed him, and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw it, that their champion was dead, they fled. They fled. There's a winner for you, folks. David didn't put his confidence in his slingshot. David didn't put his confidence in the stone he picked up. David put his confidence in the Lord God. And he said, the Lord God will give us the victory. That's a winner. But you know, I know about three other winners that I want to talk to you about in Daniel chapter 3. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, of course, was all puffed up in and of himself, you know, thinking himself to be pretty big. So he set up these gods or images. And when the sounds of the music came, everybody was supposed to bow down and worship these things. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. And so he called them in. He says, is it true that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn and the flute and the harp and the lyre and the psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Well, that's a pretty haughty fellow there, isn't it? And Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego answered and said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and He will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. And Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury. And the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. And he commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times hotter. And they cast them into it. And it was so hot that the flames killed the guys that put them in. That's how hot it was. But then, all of a sudden, they looked in the furnace, and there were 4 men walking around in there. 4 men! And they weren't hurt in any way. And one of them was like unto the Son of God. Satraps, administrators, governors, kings, counselors gathered together and saw them on whose bodies the fire had no power, and the hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not upon them. You know why? Because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were winners, not quitters. They were winners. But you know, Paul is a great example of a winner. When he told Timothy in his second epistle to Timothy, 4th chapter, beginning verse 6, I am already being poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not me only, but to all those who have loved his appearing. Paul was a winner. He fought the good fight. And, you know, the apostles, were winners too, really. In Acts chapter 4, you remember, they were called before the Sanhedrin and commanded not to speak or teach in the name of Jesus. Remember what Peter and John told him? Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things that we have seen and heard. In Acts chapter 5, and down at verse... Oops, I didn't put that one on there, did I? I'm sorry. In Acts chapter 5, and verses 28 and 29, after they went back out, say, hey, didn't we tell you not to teach in His name? And now you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine. You intend to bring this man's blood on us. And Peter and the other apostles answered, we ought to obey God rather than men. And that settles it right there. That's winners. That's winners. But I want you to look in just the last few minutes we have together here at some of the characteristics of a quitter. A quitter is always negative. Oh, it can't be done. It can't be done. It can't be done. Just like over in Numbers 13, verse 31. They're stronger than we. We can't do it. And you know what else? Quitters are also excuse hunters. They're looking for every excuse in the book for doing what they should do. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 4. The lazy man will not plow because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. Proverbs chapter 26, 13. The lazy man says, there is a lion in the road, a fierce lion in the street. And of course, Luke 14, beginning verse 15, about those that the Lord talked about who were invited to a great feast. Come, all things are now ready. But verse 18 says, but they all with one accord began to make excuse. They made excuses. And that's what happens to the quitters. You will find them coming up with some of the most far-fetched excuses that you've ever heard in your life. They sound like fairy tales sometimes. But that's one of the characteristics of the quitters. When it comes time to do that which God expects of us, they have every excuse in the book. And some that aren't in the book yet. But the quitter also is one who blames their failures on others. Kind of like Adam and Eve, remember in the garden? It's that woman you gave to be with me. That's why I sinned. That woman you gave to me. The woman says, no, no, no. It's that serpent you led in the garden. That's what happened. You see? And you know, that's one of the characteristics of quitters. It's never their fault. The whole world is out to get them. The whole world is out to get them. And it goes right along with the excuse making, doesn't it? It goes right along with it. Also, a characteristic of quitters is they refuse to face problems. They see a problem coming and they run the other way. Kind of like Jonah. Try to run just as far as they can. But of course, we know from the case of Jonah, that didn't work too well, did it? That didn't work. The quitter also procrastinates. Just like Felix, oh, whenever I have a more convenient time, I'll call for you. Yeah, we're going to do that. Yeah, we're going to do that when we get around to it. Maybe next week or the week after next. Well, the fact of the matter is the convenient time never comes because there's always something else getting in the way. And you know who puts those things in the way? It's not the Lord. It's not the Lord. It's the devil. And as long as he can make you procrastinate and say later, 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 he's got you. Because sooner or later, you're going to just give up and say, well, you know what, I'm just never going to find time for this. And you'll quit altogether. You'll quit. You'll quit. The quitter also tends to wilt under pressure. Jesus talked about this when he's talking about the various soils. In Matthew 13, beginning verse 20, he received the seed on stony places. It's he who hears the word immediately receives it with joy, but he has no root and endures only for a little while. When tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. That's the quitter. That's the quitter. But let's talk about the characteristics of a winner. A winner is always positive. Like Joshua and Caleb. Let's go up and take it. The Lord has given it to us. Or, if you will, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, as Paul said in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13. That's the winner. That's the winner. Not looking for excuses, but just doing it. And, you know, that hits right here. You never hunt for excuses. What do? They get on and do the work that needs to be done. They get on and do the work that needs to be done. They don't wait around, try to think of an excuse to get out of it. Over in Genesis chapter 42, verses 1 and 2, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another? What are you waiting for? I've heard there's grain in Egypt. You go down there and get it." That's a winner. The winner gets it done. A winner doesn't run from their problems. They face their problems head on. They face them. You know, the psalmist said in Psalm 11 and verse 1, "In the Lord I put my trust." How can you say to my soul, "Flee as a bird to your mountain"? What does he mean? With trust in the Lord, we can face our problems. We don't have to fly away. We can hit them head on. And you know, the winner does not hesitate when knowledge of truth is theirs. Remember over in Acts chapter 8, Philip and the eunuch? Eunuch's riding along the chariot. He got up in the chariot and he preached unto him Jesus. And you know what we found out? We found out that the eunuch was a winner. You know why? Because he didn't hesitate. He said, "See, here's water. What hinders me from being baptized? I know what I need to do. Here's the means whereby I can do it. Now what stands between me and doing it? Let's get it out of the way. Let's get it out of the way. Let's take care of it." He was a winner. He was a winner all the way. He and Philip both went down into the water and Philip baptized him. But you know, the winner also recognizes that today is the day of salvation. Not tomorrow, not next week, not a month from now or a year from now. In an acceptable time, God said, "I have heard you in the day of salvation. I have helped you." 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 2. And Paul says, "Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." Why? Because now is all you've got for sure. You don't have tomorrow. You don't have next week or next month or next year. You need to be concerned about the salvation right now. Because that's the only thing you can be sure of. These are all winners here that we're talking about. Now, in the closing moments of our lesson, we're going to make some applications. Many who quit attending the assemblies of the Lord's Church, or many who change congregations every few years and blame someone else, never see themselves at fault. It's always the preacher or the members or the teachers or somebody. Many of them who do not attend assemblies regularly find themselves in the category of the excuse hunters. "I was too tired. We got in bed too late. Company came, and I didn't want to embarrass them by leaving for the assembly." the building is just too cold or too hot. And many are like the prodigal son who wasted all he had in riotous living. And quite frankly, they're just too busy with the pleasures of this world. Those are the losers. The winners are the ones who plan their time around the Lord's kingdom. You see the difference? To the losers, to the quitters, the Lord's kingdom is an inconvenience that they try to work in. The winners plan their time around the kingdom. Company or kinfolk are never allowed to keep them from where they should be when it comes time to worship the Lord. In fact, they are like Philip. We read about over in John chapter 1, verses 45 and 46. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And Nathanael said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" And Philip said, "Come and see." You know what you teach your relatives when they come in on you at the last minute and get you to stay away from assembling with the saints? You know what you teach them? You teach them that the family's a whole lot more important than the church. That's what you teach them. Now, isn't that a wonderful lesson? Isn't that a wonderful lesson that you have taught them? That'll sure save their soul, won't it? You know that I'm not telling the truth here. You need to be like this winner we're talking about over here called Philip, who went and got Nathanael and said, "Come on and see for yourself." You know, I can't help but think about our Lord in Matthew chapter 12, verses 47 through 50. Now, leading up to this, you realize that Jesus was in a house. He was surrounded by people. And someone came and said, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak with you." Now, this is talking to Jesus here. But Jesus answered and said to the ones who told him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." What did he teach us here? He taught us that spiritual relationships take priority over physical relationships. That's what he taught us. He taught us how to be a winner, just like he was, to be a winner and not a loser. So, as we finish the lesson for this morning, what are you? Which of these descriptions fits you? A quitter or a winner? Now, I'm not going to take a poll here, but I want every one of us to look deep into our hearts and really, really see what's there. And if we find out that we are amongst the losers and the quitters, then we need to do something about it. And you know why? Because winners never quit and quitters never go to heaven. I know that's a little different than you might have heard that before, but that's what I believe the scriptures teach. Winners never quit and quitters never go to heaven. And dear one, I want you and I want me and I want every beloved one in this assembly today to be joined together someday in the presence of the Lord in heaven. I want that more than anything else. But we can only do it if we have the attitude of winners. And we keep ourselves consistently with that attitude and not allow the things of this world to to stand between us and serving God.